Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
You have played this game too long, mortal. My servants can smell your blood. Human, I think I shall remove you from the board to face your own masters.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Play Retro, episode number 7. I am Scott Johnson, one of your hosts, and I'm ready to dip a little mana into my shooter.
Oh, and I am your other host, Brian Dunaway, and at the start of a life, I chose Hurt Me Plenty, and I have regretted it every day since.
Oh, Hurt Me Plenty. Did these the same, scaling thing in there? Is the same list of difficulties?
No, it's not. It's actually even... I think there's even difference for the classes in the new in the one we're talking about, Day Hexen.
You're right. The classes had different settings for their difficulty levels because they all played so different. Yeah, we'll get to all that. That's just a hint of what's coming up here on today's show. Before we get too far into it, though, couple things. We got some listeners who believe that Brian's $20 television that's behind him right now with Metroid Prime 1 sitting on there. What a cool intro that game had.
I love it. It's flashy and it looks like viruses and everything else. And I'm like, what's the story, Metroid Prime on GameCube?
It holds up in a really magical way. That element of it is really neat. Anyway, a lot of people think your TV was hot. They think you got it off some fencing weirdo and out of the back of his trunk, and he, you know, used it for drugs or something. What do you think?
I said, the guy was on Facebook Marketplace. He sold it to me. We met in the parking lot of a not even a real Piggly Wiggly. It's their Saver brand of Piggly Wiggly stores. He ran there with the thing in his arms on a, you know, almost a drizzly day. Sure, it looks suspect. Sure. But it's a $20 TV that I'm sure nobody misses, even if it is hot. I mean, if you're going to do something, it doesn't sound like stealing somebody's, 25-year-old TV and selling it to somebody else for $20 is exactly the move to make.
I agree. But it works, though. Look at it back there working away, pumping out the goods.
Let me tell you, even if he stole this thing, he earned the $20 from hauling it from where he came from.
Yeah.
He was sweating.
It's not giving you back cancer or something by just playing back there, is it?
I was worried it would smell like smoke and everything else would be. I was worried about the condition. It's in really good condition. And once I did see the guy, he looked like he's a young person. But he looked like he was really into retro games. He kind of had that whole vibe, and he's just he seemed like he was from the city. I live in a fairly small town. He seemed like he had an accent like he was from the city, and I think he was just trying to make changes in his life.
Sure,
but that's what I'm telling myself so that I can have this hot TV behind me.
Yeah, and I can respect this about this guy. He's totally.
Oh, by the way, I have another hot TV coming in. This one's free. 26-inch Sanyo has 2 S video inputs.
Wait, how are you getting that? Saturday. How'd you work that out? Is this another one of your Brian's got a sugar daddy out there somewhere who's just like going, oh, Brian wants a thing? I'm putting it in the mail today. Like, he's got somebody on the out.
Send that to him.
I don't know who that is, but congratulations. I don't have anybody like that in my life. Yeah, that's fantastic.
This is actually, I said I wouldn't go back to Facebook Marketplace, but I did. And I went and looked. I just typed in old TV, and instead of doing 20 miles from where I'm at, I did 50 miles. And there was somebody right on the edge there who was giving away a free TV. And this person actually had a Facebook profile that looked like a normal human being. The last guy I wasn't sure about, you know. Mm. But this person has a regular, you know, picture. And so I was like, because I was one, I got this TV really cheap, but it's only got AV. So it's got one audio and one video and a coax. So the quality is only going to go so far. This one's actually S-Video, so I decided to take a chance.
If you're getting an S-Video television, that is actually pretty cool because you can connect. So here's what I think. The 20-inch behind you is perfect for all your, like, NES, Genesis, you know.
Yes.
Put all that on there. And then your Cube, your, you know, whatever, your things that might take advantage of a little higher bump in video and definitely a bump in audio quality. I think that may be the new TV to use it for.
I've got the good S-Video GameCube. There was a version that didn't have the better connectors, and I have the one with both the high-definition connector, so that's the reason why the GameCube is what prompted me to look again.
Oh, well, that'll do that. My GameCube died when one of my son's friends, a TV about that big, was connected to a GameCube, and he got up there and thought he was being funny, and he grabbed the TV and it fell over face down and smashed the GameCube and the controllers.
Oh my God.
Wrecked it. I was so pissed. I was so pissed at that kid. And that kid now, he's like on the run from the law. He's like a little drug dealing weirdo kid.
Oh, now. he broke the wrong person's GameCube.
Yeah, he did.
A pattern of bad behavior.
Yep. He's living a life of crime and is in his, you know, he's 20 or 22 or something now. Anyway, good luck to him and his trip on the lam. Also, I went down a pretty hard 16-bit sports rabbit hole in the last little bit. And all week I have been like scouring every old 16-bit football game I could find. The Tecmo series of stuff that were on the SNES and Genesis. I played a lot of World Series Baseball on the Genesis. And the 32X version, by the way, was awesome.
Oh,
nice. Graphically, it was not that different, but it had really great sound and just a better, just kind of the best version that they made. It's part of the Sega Sports series. I still think it's the best 16-bit baseball game ever made, and there are plenty of good ones. All right, Ken Griffey Jr. Some weird stuff on the front cover, but the rest is real good.
If you're not following Play Retro Show, Scott posted on Twitter. You should, because Scott posted that picture, and it is fan freaking tastic.
I worry about it. You know, like it's not.
It's borderline what you might think of as like going, oh, did somebody do that on purpose, or is that feels almost a little bit. Like it could be in a racist area, but it's not. It's just the way the artwork.
It's just the art. It's the pixel art. It's just not. I'm just saying. I think it's not great, but the game's good. And I like Ken Griffey Jr. as an alternative. It's a good game, but I went through all of them, and I am telling you, after extensive play, and we'll get into this in some future episode. For me, pound for pound, World Series Baseball. 98, I think, is the last version they did. And then I want to say that may have been the 32X version as well. Although I think they just titled that World Series Baseball. But anyway, that was an amazing baseball game. And I'm still playing.
Were we into rubber banding with our sports game at some generation?
I think it was mostly like arcade translations still had a lot of rubber banding. Like the NBA Jams were that way, although you could tweak rules to make them less so. But like World Series Baseball never felt that way to me. It has a really fair batting and swinging and stuff kind of system to it. The one weird thing I'm running into is I've noticed. So we've talked about NHL 94 before, possibly voted by many, including myself, to be maybe the greatest sports video game of all time.
It's
specifically the Genesis version. The SNES version is different and it's not the same. It's weird. It's not as good. They got more kind of close to each other around 96, 97, but back then, for some reason, this Genesis one just had magic in it. Just felt amazing. It was the first one that had like the one-shot mechanic and all that. Or the one-touch one-shot. What's it called? Where you
Is
pass
it,
it
one-touch?
In, you pass yeah, it you in and gun. The guy immediately shoots. Whatever that's called.
Yeah. I don't know, but it was a game changer. Something. Literally.
Yeah, it was amazing. Anyway, it was really good. And Game Pass has a version of that in there. You just install it, and it plays like the old retro, you know, Genesis version, music, sound, everything. It's just like that game. But they've got brand new current rosters in it, which I didn't expect. So I fired that thing up, and I'm thinking, well, I guess I'm going to play with some team that doesn't exist anymore, or a team that's bad now, or it was good then, or, you know, I didn't know. And I fired up, and it's like, here we go. We got the Las Vegas Golden Knights. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
That's
really
amazing.
It's really rad.
See what love does?
Love does a lot. Yeah,
passion and love does this. It keeps things alive like
you know,
that.
Here's the other reason you know that game was so influential and huge. If you buy a brand new NHL game from EA,
right,
like NHL 22 or last year's 21, which is on Game Pass, those games have the controller settings screen. They got a bunch of stuff like skill stick controls or hybrid controls, you know, these different control settings. One of the options is literally called NHL 94 controls. They go all the way back to that, even though those same controls kind of carried up through the whole 16-bit generation up to 99 or whatever they stopped doing them. So that's how influential it is. There's entire giant communities around that game that still have tournaments to this day. And there's an entire website called NHL94.com that is not owned by EA. It's just a bunch of fans doing a bunch of homegrown tournaments and speed run type stuff and just all kinds of crazy shit around that game. It's freaking great. So anyway, that's a whole other episode. We'll get to it at some point. But here's where it landed me.
Oh.
I got so into playing all this that I remembered how much I love Mutant League Football and Mutant League Hockey that I played a bunch of those. And I went, wait, wasn't there like a modern like 2017-18 game that tried to do that football thing? And I just kind of forgot I had it or whatever. And sure enough, I have Mutant League Football, MLF. Okay, it's a little slightly different. It's clearly a spiritual successor to all of these. And it's like a modern, beautiful, like, you know, rendered out game with swears and everything and commentary.
What?
Where you play football on a field full of mines and holes and ice and the guys are all big monster-y dudes or skeletons or mutants of some sort or another. And it's really good. So I just want to give those guys a shout out. It's on sale, by the way. The Xbox Store has it for all the Xbox Series XS and One. For $7 or something. Stupid cheap. And on the PC, I don't know if it's on sale, but it's on the PC as well. It's on Switch. It's just a great game, and I really like it. It is a great throwback to these old games, but doesn't look like ass. Okay? Because those old ones, they're great still. I mean, Mutant League Football, still a good game. It looks like a butthole.
Well, it looks like a butthole. Interesting.
I don't think it looks very good. And I'm not, and this is me. I'm here to tell you that a lot of these games hold up visually. They look good for their era.
Yeah.
I'm just saying those mutant games, not so much.
I think as a general rule, me and you agree that up until like the 32, about the time we decided to take our first steps into 3D is when things kind of went sideways with how things looked. Whereas like 16-bit and prior, most of it still kind of holds up.
Yeah.
Looks like artistic choice.
Yeah. And another note, two, the sequel to Mutant Football League,
right,
is coming out later this year. So
interesting.
Yeah, if you want to see how those guys are doing. I wish they'd do a hockey game, but they haven't yet. Yeah.
Scott Pre-Show talked me down from being disappointed in my Xbox Series S, which I've had for, you know, forever, it feels like, at least 6 months. And
you thought it was more gimped than it is. That's the problem.
I had a mental block. I don't have the best, the X, which is one I was wanting to get and I couldn't locate. And so, Scott's convinced me that it's not as bad as I thought. So I'll have to purchase these. I'll have to get this Mutant Football League.
Yeah, give it a shot.
The first one on sale.
Yeah, it's only $7. And here's the thing to just know for those out there going, wait, what was the core argument? Here's the thing. There's only two differences between the S and the X. Three differences.
Happiness and sadness.
Sorry, I forgot. There's actually three. It's a digitally, it's digital only, so no drive on it. Okay, no optical drives. You're not going to run Blu-rays and stuff like that. For the S, the X always has a drive, has a optical in it. Number two, hard drives like, I forget, 800 something versus the gig that's in the other one, whatever it is.
Right.
So yeah, it's hard like drive smaller. Size, yeah, maybe a little less than double, but yes. And then the S outputs at 1440p. Still considered high def, but not full 4K. And some games don't even use 4K. So in those cases, it doesn't really matter. They already output at 1444p, even on the X. But the point is, X is capable of 4K. in games. This one is not, although it will do 4K in media like Netflix, whatever.
Right.
So that's it. All the ray tracing is there. The speed is there. Like the one-to-one comparison in every other sense is there. But it's hard to know
but
that. 'Cause
one has an S on it and one says an X.
Yeah, one's a big monolithic tower that looks badass and the other one looks like a tiny little thing.
It does. It just looks so much more. It just looks so much cooler.
Yeah. So there's the, that whole thing. If you can get an X, great. If you get an S, it's not, you're not buying a GIMP. You're buying a... that a bad... people not
X,
like this to say
X is going to give it to them. I have to have it. So.
Yeah, X is going to give it to you. That's right.
Yeah.
Brian, also, you got your GameCube all hooked up. We talked about that. If I wanted to get one of these CRTs, which...
Yes.
Do you think I go Facebook Marketplace or do I go like Craigslist? What do I do? Where do I go?
Well, I'm afraid of Craigslist. As scared of as I am of Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist is like... It's a nightmare, man. Yeah,
they're gonna
legit people on Craigslist? I don't even know.
They're going to touch your pee-pee. Yeah. If you go there, they're going to go, hey.
I don't know, man. That one really scares me. But you definitely don't go on eBay unless you're just like, you know what? I don't want to hassle with anything and I want it now. So that's always the deal I tell people. It's like it's according to what you got. Do you got more money than time? Mm. Then go ahead. If you got tons of money, go ahead and just order it off eBay because you can get it, you know, practically right now.
Yeah, eBay is like a giant mute button. You don't have to deal with the people. And if they email you trying to get you to deal with them, you ignore those emails because they're trying to scam you anyway, and you move on.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to take your advice. Let's see what King Griffey says.
I think you guys should keep making the show and talk about Heretic and Hexen.
Okay.
But wait, I got to talk about this before we do that. I got to talk about one more thing. I didn't put it in the notes here, but it did arrive. Tony said he was going to send it, and Tony came through. Tony sent me.
Oh, you bastard.
This Mr. FPGA emulation, hardware emulation.
See? Brian's got, he's got sugar daddies. I don't have a sugar daddy. You know, the closest thing I have is a sugar daddy is Greg for Walkman in the chat sent me an old Walkman once. And that was awesome. I love him for it.
Pretty cool. I don't have a Walkman, so that's pretty. Was it a Sony Walkman?
Yeah, it's a yellow Sportsman one. You can't get them anywhere anymore. Look, it's right here. Right? I've been using it to transfer some old tapes around. But the
difference between me and you, Scott, is that I complain about this for months at a time until people send me stuff to shut up about it.
This is true, says King Griffey Jr. I agree.
Yeah. Right. See, I really wanted it. You know, I really wanted one, but I couldn't find them in stock anywhere available. And so, like I said, Tony hooked me up, and this is amazing. Let me tell you just quick. I'm gonna review this thing fully very shortly. I just got it this week. I've only had a couple of chances to really load it up. Yeah. But I'm gonna tell you right now, 16-bit and before is what this really does. They're working on a PlayStation core, but everything before then works just flawlessly. And I can't quite put my finger on exactly what the difference is yet, but it just feels right. There's like almost zero input lag, which I seem to have more of when I'm playing in on my RetroPie. And I'm sure there's ways to tweak stuff. But man, I just plugged this thing in, threw up a couple of the Genesis games I've played a lot of through emulation. And the experience just felt snappy. And it felt crisp. And the sound was just spot on. It felt like it felt when I used to play my Sega Genesis, you know, plugged in the raw
business.
And that's what it felt like.
Yeah. Well, that's what you want. That's what the whole point of those things are, right? Is you get the real deal.
It's almost really hard to sell somebody on one of these things until they've actually played with it. And they're like,
it's like VR. If you put a VR headset on, you get it. If you don't, you don't get it. This thing, same thing. In fact, I look at it and I go, Brian, what's with the giant power brick you got there? It looks stupid. Yeah. But no, the Mister is badass, and I have no sugar mama or daddy.
Right, right.
I have nobody. So, I don't have anybody out there who's like, hey, you know what Scott could use? One of these. Nope.
Well, maybe if you bitch about it for about 6 or 7 months like I did about the Mister, then maybe somebody else.
Well, time will tell.
You complained it too.
Time will tell. All right, let's get into this week's big discussion. Very excited about this. Here we go.
Shall we play a game?
We shall. Hey, Brian, have you heard of Hexen Beyond Heretic? No. Have you heard of Heretic, first of all? Let's start where it all began. Right. Did that game mean anything to you when we first started talking about this being a possibility? That's what I wanted.
When you said Heretic, or you said actually when you said Hexen and you said Beyond Heretic, I was like, I remember that. I remember some cover art. I usually remember cover art. That's like my one thing that I have. It's like I can remember the cover art of almost every movie or game I've seen, and I could instantly see what it was, but I couldn't see the gameplay. And I was like, I can't remember. So I didn't play a lot of this back in the day. I do think I downloaded the demo, the shareware at that point. Mm-hmm. I remember peeking through it, but going, this is just Doom and dark fantasy.
Yeah,
and
I was you're like, not wrong. You're not wrong. It's exactly what it is. It's quite literally that first game, Heretic, is them saying, let's take the Doom engine. It's almost like a mod. And let's throw this together to make it a fantasy setting. It'll be dark fantasy and super metal and all that, but it's, you know, it's not sci-fi. Although there are some sci-fi elements, but and once in a while there's a creature, you know, they were all sprites back then, but there's a creature that might hover over and you'll go, oh, well, they just took the eyeball from Doom and reskinned it. And that's okay. Cause again, Heretic is the beginning of something, not the end.
It was a modified Doom engine. So yeah, there's only so far you can go, right? With visually, because of the engine.
Yeah. And it's you know, again, when I first saw it, my big freak out was we were already playing at the office I worked at. We were already playing Doom every day. And I'm like 22 or one, or I don't know. I'm young when this is going on. And I just had a voracious appetite for this new genre of shooters. I just thought this was the most amazing time to be alive. And we would play until late into the evening. Even when my wife was pregnant with our first, she would try to play, but she couldn't because it'd make her sick. So she'd lay pregnant on a couple of benches and just lay there while I played till two. I feel kind of bad about it now, but she was cool with it. She seemed all right with it at the time. But anyway, we switched over to this for a chunk of time, and it's all we could play. We just loved it so much. That was just felt new, like we were doing something new, and it wasn't just Doom again. And we started modding it. We started making our own maps. We made a map in Heretic. I wish I could find this somewhere. The old WADs, they're somewhere in my old hard drives. But we made a map that was an exact replica of the building we all worked in. And bathrooms and everything. We did this in Quake as well. But
if you weren't around during that time, that's what we did with Doom and Quake engines. The first thing you would do is you would build a map. And lots of times it would be like your house or or the office, just kind of like kids do today with Minecraft. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to recreate the house. And that was our time, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we did.
Yep.
And so you got the bathroom and everything?
Yeah, bathrooms, toilets. I mean, they were pretty rudimentary.
did you put spawn placements there for the creatures to spawn out of the toilet?
Oh, hell yeah. You'd open up a door in the bathroom, the stall, and there'd be like one of those floating imps or whatever in there. That was always cool.
It wasn't one of the centaurs though, right?
No, hell no. They would take up too much space. They were too big and they would get stuck in there. They wouldn't move those effing things.
Occupied.
It was a cool thing though. So it was published by ID or ID Software, GT Interactive, when it went retail. And it was developed by a very young bunch of developers calling themselves Raven Software. Now, that may mean nothing to some people, but to those who know the name Raven, you'll know that they did some really rad stuff. And they got bought recently in the big scheme of things by Activision. And as you know, Microsoft is in the middle of purchasing and acquiring all of Activision Blizzard. And part of what they get out of this is the Hexen and Heretic IPs, which is very cool. Because also Phil Spencer says, not long ago, said out loud, we're very excited about the back catalog of IPs from Activision. Partly because he's a gigantic Hexen fan and he can't wait to see more Hexen. Now, that's tantamount to him saying, yeah, we're making a new Hexen game. Whether or not that comes through or not, we'll have to see. But I'm here for it, dude. That new Doom engine, give me that new Doom engine, Doom Eternal, and then slap this in there. Let's go full fantasy and go nuts with it. You're talking my language.
You want the new Doom engine. So I was debating this too. I was like, oh, if we saw it again, how would I want it to be? Would I want it to be, the new? Of course, that's the default way you go. But I kind of want to see, a 3D world with sprites. Mm-hmm. After playing this, I played the crap out of this past week, and I'm like, man, the art that is sprite making is just phenomenal. That probably comes from my love from indie games, because you see this a lot in indie games. But
I started drawing some stuff in some sprite software I picked up. I should talk to you about that sometime.
Do you think there would be success? Just throwing that on the Doom engine?
You'd have to make it free or something.
Right.
It would be the fun. It'd be a fun throwback, but I don't think you could sell it like a retail game. I think if they really wanted to go nuts with it, they create a proper, in the way they rebooted Doom, like kind of how Doom is its own new big thing now. Like take that and do it there. And I'm cool having that there. Meanwhile, there are people homebrewing new levels all the time to this stuff. Hexen 2, which was set in the Quake engine. People still make maps for that. There's plenty of activity there and a lot of love for this stuff. So I don't think Microsoft or, however they're going to handle this stuff, I don't think they have to do that. I think they could just make it straight up game and it would be good.
I think you're right. I think it would be a love letter to the fans. And just a way to grab attention, saying, hey, look, we're doing things that Sony's not doing. Mm-hmm. We're doing things that Nintendo's not really doing. Look what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're bringing back that PC love that you had for Hexen and these classic Doom games. I think that's the right move.
Well, here's some interesting history on the company that made it. Raven, founded in 1990 by brothers Brian and Steve Raffel. This is a little three-person company. They were discovered by John Romero, co-founder of id Software. Okay, we all know, Romero. He's famous for lots of reasons, not just controversial ones, but, he's an interesting guy. I saw him at a mall once. He has no idea who I am, but I saw him at a mall. Anyway.
Yeah, I talked to him last year thanks to one of our community members who sent me through the mail.
Weird. Someone sent you a thing? Okay, keep going.
Actually, they were supposed to have an interview. They joined the Romero's Discord server, and they had a contest there to hang out and talk and ask questions with John Romero, and they handed that honor off to me, and so I got a chance to talk to him, and that was just freaking amazing time, because I didn't know what to ask, so I didn't even plan questions, because I was like, I'm just going to sound stupid, because I'm going to ask stupid stuff like, what was it like working on the,
Did you say anything about his cool hair? Did you say who does your hair and how can I get some of that?
Yeah, who does your hair? He still looks so freaking young.
Yeah, it's weird.
He still looks so freaking young. But he doesn't know my name either, Scott. We share that same thing. I just had a little longer exposure to him. Yeah. I still got that Romero suntan.
Me, it was just the mall, and it was the 90s, and it was before I really knew who he was. And he was here in Salt Lake City. He worked for a company called Software and More while he was also doing id stuff before they could make enough money to jump out on their own. And he used to sell floppy disks to people, and he was an interesting dude around here.
So that's the one thing you got to know about Romero. He is a freaking businessman through and through. He pushed this thing. He surrounded himself with talent. Okay. Mm-hmm. Plus, he's also, he was pretty talented at level design. Some of those, you'll go back, if you look which ones he did, he was just a really smart leader.
Yeah.
He really made things happen.
He did. Him and Carmack, interesting pair. I don't think they get along now. I don't think they even talk, but
no, if you listen to the Masters of Doom, have you read that book?
I have not yet, and always meant to and should. I need to pick that up and read it.
You need to do it. I have the audiobook. Can I share those? I
think
I can
share that with me.
Yeah, I'm going to share that with you because it is an amazing listen. Those guys were amazing. They had a small apartment and they were in the same town as Raven. Raven put in put out an ad in the paper. That's how he did it back in the day.
Yeah.
For a programmer.
Yeah.
And Romero saw it. So he, he hoofed it down there like the entrepreneur he is.
Yeah.
And sold them on the idea of using the Doom engine. And then he ends up helping all along with this stuff, and it's an amazing story.
Well, the cool thing about the engine at the time was that they had made it so it was very modular and easy to work with. You could make, I made levels for hell's sakes, and I didn't know what I was doing. But all the things triggers and think Minecraft, how you can build a bunch of crazy Minecraft stuff, and certain blocks do certain things, and all that.
Yes,
like programmatic kind of visually. That's what Doom did, and that was really unusual at the time.
That's one of the things, one of the many facets of what made Doom so successful, and as an engine as well, because Romero created level editor tools, so you literally could have somebody just working, didn't have to really have programming skills. They just were visually defining these levels, and as a result, you get this wide range of creativity that just really play through.
Yeah, it was really great.
And he trained Raven on the software, showed them how to make maps and everything. And so everybody got a chance. I think just about everybody at Raven seems like they worked on at least a level or so. So that's just freaking,
it's very cool.
That'll be so and much fun.
For those of
that'll
you who are so like, fun. What else did they make? Well, they were company and independent for a long time. They made Quake 4, and they made one of the Wolfenstein follow-up games. Of course, Heretic, Hex and Beyond Heretic, and Hexen 2. And they were all together till 97. They were acquired by Activision for $12 million. And they were still collaborating with id Software at the time. So Soldier of Fortune, I don't know if you guys remember the 2000 Soldier of Fortune had like this cool tech for blowing up legs and limbs and stuff. It was really, really gory. I remember that. That was pretty cool.
It's all about the Gibbs.
Yeah, it's always about the Gibbs. Yeah, always about the Gibbs. Get it, not, and we don't mean the Andy Gibb and his brothers. We mean
not two Bs, just the one B.
Yeah, some say it's Jibs. They're wrong. It's Gibbs. Jibs.
Yeah, they'd be absolutely incorrect.
They made... they were working on that over-budget Wolfenstein possible game, but the company made a major layoff, lost 35 people, and left with two teams. So in October 2010, now we're getting closer to real time, they had this Singularity game. Major delays on that game. Do you remember that game, PS3 era thing?
I do remember it. I don't have a deep knowledge about it, though.
I think it was good. But anyway, then there were more layoffs. Then ZeniMax acquired id. And everything got weird. So then they got moved over and were basically the full-time Call of Duty series helpers. So they weren't making their own game so much as they were contributing to the monster machine that is Call of Duty. That really bummed me out at the time. It just made me go, well, that's not cool to take these venerable industry veterans and make them. I mean, the founders had long cashed their checks and gotten the hell out of there, but you know what I mean. Like there was a lot of love for these guys, and I feel like they were just getting underused. Like Microsoft did with Rare at first, or what's the other one? There was another acquisition where everyone was so excited, and then they got sucked in, and no one cared after that. And I can't remember who it is.
Yeah,
but anyway, so that was a thing. But here's the deal now. As of December 2000, I don't know where is it. 20. Oh yeah, here it is. As of 2020, they are mostly working on. Warzone, so the big battle royale multiplayer Warzone Call of Duty business. But if this thing happens and they got bought by and this Microsoft thing goes through, Hexen on a new console and home computers,
dude. Yeah, but I'm totally excited. Before these, you've done this to me a many episodes so far. We're only 7 episodes into Play Retro. But you've done this to me at least several times where it's like, yeah, I had a little bit of experience with that game, but I really didn't get into it. What wasn't really my groove. Mm. And I'm kind of surprised this wasn't my groove because once Doom came out and Quake, that's all I played for years. There was no other game. No other game existed.
Yeah, this seems firmly up your hole here, this game. I'm surprised.
Yeah, this is way up my hole.
Yeah.
And so, and I was kind of shocked that I never really played it or gave it a real big chance. I guess it was just two different flavors. It's like, oh no, I'm used to, this space marine kind of thing. I'm not really into the dark fantasy right now. And oh my God, I've played so much Hexen. I want to complete Hexen Beyond Heretic. I'm not really sure if I want to go back and play the other Heretic. I kind of took a peek at it. Mm. I may want to play Heretic 2. Or is it Hexen 2?
Well, it's Hexen. As well. There's Hexen 1, which is beyond. It's called Hexen 1 Beyond Heretic. That's the one that really went nuts. Yeah, went nuts with it, and it added classes. It added.
Right.
But they really and they heavily modified the engine to be able to handle a whole bunch more stuff, including mouse look. What else
mouse
could you
look,
do?
Inventory, I think, was new to this.
Yeah. Yeah. They basically have a Diablo class thing at the bottom. Look at that, bottom
bit. That's the bottom third.
It reminds me of the Diablo screen a little bit.
It's totally the Diablo screen. Yeah. Yeah. But I really regret that I didn't get to play this. But when we do these reviews, lots of times I have to put it in my review. I just go, no, we're done with that because I got to look at the next game. Mm-hmm. But I want to finish this to complete.
Oh, yeah. You should keep playing it. It's really fun. It's a very it actually still holds up. I think Hexen in particular holds up. The first one felt more like a Doom mod. This felt like its own game. It was clearly using the source material, source engine to right. whatever degree. But the fact that it supported Mouse Look, although you had to program, you had to do some DOS chicanery to get that to work, if I remember right. But yeah,
Mouse Look is every look. Mouse Look is everything, and I think it's one of the reasons why you don't get as not. I think when you lock in without the Mouse Look, I think that causes more nausea than when you have the Mouse Look. I think just that
it does for me.
Spinning locked in. Yeah,
yeah. I agree. There's and also these games were famous for their bounce, and the bounce really gets some people. My wife could not do the bounce in these games.
Yeah, yeah. Why is this character bouncing? Because it looks normal. Also, something I didn't realize is how the game moves, because you always think, actually, if you look at it programmatically, I did a little deep dive here on this. If you look at it programmatically, the character is stationary and you're just moving the world, mm-hmm. which makes sense, mm-hmm. but you don't usually think about it.
Right. And that so is a wild thing, right? Like, I remember somebody showing a demo of Forbidden West, the first game. The Forbidden West comes out this week. What's it called? Horizon Zero Dawn. They were talking about how, you know, what you see in front of you is these far off mountains, these close cliffs, this water out in front of you, these creatures, the stuff, all this, whatever. And that seems normal. And if you turn to the left a little bit, your view switches and you see whatever was to the left of her or behind her or whatever. But at any given time, they're only rendering the cone you can see.
Right.
So there is none of this is happening anywhere else. It only happens because you move and it goes blah, 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 and interpolates everything. This may sound obvious to everybody, but I'd never thought of it in those terms. You know? Like, I always think, well, if I run past a rock, that rock's still behind me. No, they're not rendering it anymore. Yeah. It's gone.
Oh, my dear. If you want to blow your mind, just read some interviews with Carmack and just listen to some of the stuff he says and how his passion is for all this stuff. And you're like, holy cow, he was really pushing the hardware beyond or to the limits and then figuring out ways to make it to fool the mind. To believe it was he was a magician.
He was a damn genius. Everything about that.
He's
guy.
A freaking he's a warlock, is what he is. That's the reason why he likes the Hexen so much.
Yeah, it's the reason the Romero couldn't hang out with him anymore, because he true warlocks. Can't have a warlock around. What's that about?
You can't have a warlock make it working on your game, man.
So this is when things started getting really interesting. The game didn't have to this felt like a big innovation to me, because we're now talking about the era when CD-ROM started to happen, single speed CD-ROMs or in people's rigs, this sort of thing. And the game was the first in the series of Doom Engine based games that didn't rely on MIDI music at all. It ran off game audio CDs, so the CD itself had game audio tracks on them. And so what you ended up with was a much more immersive, sort of realistic, less computery sounding, at least audio visual experience than you were getting previously. And that was a big deal.
Yeah. All the voice work was MIDI, but all of the music, like you said, was CD. And if you put one of these CDs into a CD player, they didn't adjust to anything. You literally listen to the music in a CD player.
Yeah, exactly.
So just mind blowing if you accidentally did that. Oh, I'm listening to the music now.
Yeah, that was weird. We did that with Sony discs all the time. So if you went to track one, it was a nightmare because it sounded like white noise from hell and it would kill your car speakers. But if you skipped to track two, like playing Wipeout, the Wipeout discs were great for this. Put them in your car, hurry up and skip past track one, and then tracks 2 through 8 or whatever were real music. And we would listen to those things like albums all the freaking time. It was great.
I know, because where else could you? There wasn't a radio station playing gaming music. No. And there's a real passion there. I love.
We live in we live now in a miracle time, and people should appreciate it more, because the stuff you can do is.
You can pretty much just think of any game that you can think of. It's a big hit, and you can find the soundtrack somewhere to listen to.
Somewhere. YouTube, YouTube, Spotify, almost always YouTube. Almost any other place has it.
Unless it's Nintendo.
While I was looking at those sports games, I found I'm really into NHL Hits 2003 on the GameCube. Speaking of GameCube games, I used to own that. Can't find it, but I have a ROM running real well on Dolphin right now, finally.
Yes.
With a Xbox One controller is what ended up doing the trick. Anyway, it has an amazing techno EDM soundtrack. It's so good.
I had the same ROM, and I gotta try it out. And I did boot it up, and I had the same problem. I tried to use the M30, the 8-bit do.
Yeah, the 8-bit do's don't like the sticks in there.
Yeah, And then I tried using my Xbox controller, and I think I launched this Dolphin Core through RetroArch, and it even though like it was mapped correctly, yeah. I still wasn't able to do anything. So I've got to go back and take a look, because it was definitely an issue there.
If somebody looked, if today somebody, Microsoft, I don't care who, somebody, whoever owns the rights for Acclaim Games or whoever's doing it back then, Midway.
Yes.
If somebody said, hey, NHL 2003 is now for sale for $10, $20, I'd pay $30. If they put
you
that.
You would pay $30.
I love that game so much. I mean, it's an arcadey, you know, it's made from the people that made NFL Blitz. So this is Hits.
Right.
With a Z. They made Blitz. They made NBA Jam. I mean, they make extreme sports games, but they make them so fun that they are better than The Sims. And I am telling you, NHL Hits is awesome. It's such a good game. So much fun.
I'm looking forward to playing it.
But anyway, here, you know what we haven't done? Speaking of sound, we haven't played any sound. So I'm going to play this as some gameplay sound.
Except at the top of the show, you played some of the sound clips.
Yeah, I did this
from,
guy.
You have played this game too long, mortal.
Mortal.
I love that.
Hello, mortal. Here's some gameplay from Heretic. It's a lot of shooting.
Yeah.
You know, lasers. A lot of blood.
Yeah, no guns, but the shooting was mostly from staffs.
Yeah, like magic bolts and stuff like that.
Yes, from staff infections. Yeah.
And then, let's see. I got here some Hexen gameplay audio, which is a little different. Even that CD music wasn't that great. It's okay.
Yeah.
It sucks. Ooh, see? Just a lot more magic-y, a little more into the fantasy realm, a little less of a Doom mod, you know? And then you got your Hexen 2 Beyond. No, that was just called Hexen 2. Hexen 2 for Quake Engine, and that sounded like this. Quake. The Quake Engine. Ooh. Oh, hear that? Oh, hold on. Oh, yeah. So lots, just a lot more, you know, you're playing a more modern game there is what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's
Raven,
great.
Raven at the start, they had some really strong D&D people.
Yeah,
staff,
I would say
right?
They had D&D DNA is what they had on their staff.
Yeah, they had D&D DNA. Now, you know, Romero and Carmack and all those guys had. If you listen to the Masters of Doom, they talk about all the D&D games they used to play, and so they definitely had it there as well. But man, Raven really the story gets kind of convoluted, but it definitely felt like some D&D stuff.
Oh yeah,
I mean the three serpent riders. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, serpent riders? You mean serpents that are riding or people who are riding serpents?
It's not even,
talking about this.
Yeah. It's not even like, it's not just like, hey, here's some tropes about dragons and stuff. Like this was like heavy metal level stuff. Like they were.
Yes.
It's more like that. Like metal. What's a good comparison? It's like, what if Guar was a video game? You know, that's what this feels like sometimes. To me.
Yeah, and I loved it, and like I said, I totally missed out on all that. But you can play as Baratus the fighter in Hexen Beyond Heretic, which we played, or Parias the cleric, or Daedalon the mage. What were you into? Were you more of a fighter, cleric, or mage, or were you kind of switching it up?
If
when
I
you were
remember right,
Hexen?
Mage, almost always mage. That which is true today. I usually, if there's a game where it's like, hey, choose a fighter, a mage, a healer, or whatever. Archer, it's a fight between the archer and the mage. I like the range stuff. So
You like the range stuff. You start out with the Sapphire Wand, and then you moved up to something I didn't care for when I was playing the mage, which was the Frost Shards. I didn't care for that. You freeze the enemy essentially, and they kind of hang around, and then they eventually like explode. Mm-hmm. But they get in your way. Like if you're trying to, you know, work your way through a room, they just get in your way. But then you get to the Arc of Death, which is like raining down fire. So that's probably was that your favorite probably with the,
the
mage,
I love that.
Maybe?
Yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah. But those little balls you had to move around in there, that was unusual. The other games didn't have that.
Yeah.
There's sort of new ideas in terms of like environment and like what you had to move through and traversal and all that stuff.
Yeah, we were working with, they did something interesting that I kind of hate. they went from the first Heretic game, it was, you know, typical Doom type level mapping. You know, you collect color keys and you open color key doors, and it's, you know, you just kind of just work your way through the progression.
Right.
Whereas this one had Hexen had a hub system, which is where a lot of teleporting, a lot of backtracking, kind of like, you know, a little bit of a Metroidvania kind of thing, to kind of unlock all the secrets. And that's what hooked me, that I did not see from my short play back in the day.
Well, that's the thing I think that made this game unique, was that that was kind of unheard of in a game like this, especially a shooter style game. You know, we're used to this stuff now with lots of different kinds of games sort of take this path, but this was real unusual. Boy, there's a lot of Todd McFarlane ripoff art in this thing. Have you noticed that, though?
Oh, yes. That would be about the time. But, you know, it was just that.
It was the era we were in. Yep.
It was the era that we was in. But you got to love that. Look at that serpent. Freaking look at that thing. That is so freaking.
I know. The blinking eye. It has a blinking eye on the damn thing. It's so rad.
Yeah.
So a quick bit of trivia here. This is interesting. Where is it here? Oh, a couple of things. The PlayStation version of this game, I remember people being pissed about this. They called it, everyone thought it was kind of notoriously evil, not because of the content, not because of any other reason, but because it was one of the very few games on the system that required an entire memory card, which was 15 blocks, quote unquote, blocks of memory.
15 blocks.
Yep. You had to save one game. That's what you used, an entire card. And those cards were, what, $30?
Yeah.
Whatever they were.
Yeah, the card's about $30, and Sony at the time didn't want any third party cards, so you had to get the official Sony 1 megabit. That's right, not even megabyte, megabit.
Bastards.
We don't even usually measure that, right? So anyway,
I still have a couple of those. Do you have any of those cards left? I have a couple hidden somewhere.
I don't have any, but it's 15 blocks, and that was unheard of because 1 to 3 was about the most you would see in most typical. There's a few that would go beyond that, but most of them was 1, 2, 3 was a pretty hefty one. This 15, your whole freaking card, man.
Yeah, that was bad. It was real bad. And people were mad, but it was still maybe worth it for some people. So that game you probably spent $90 on just to save your damn progress.
It's crazy. There was something I did learn about while I was also... I didn't mean to take a sidetrack when I was looking at this into the Sony memory cards. That was like, because when I read that trivia, I was like, oh, okay, 15 blocks, what's that mean? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's all you had, those dirty bastards. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see the thing that was not released here in the U.S.? It's called a Pocket Station. It released sometime after the Dreamcast popularity of the VMU. Do you remember those?
Oh, I do remember that.
Little memory units?
Yep, I have that one somewhere, too, in a box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sony had their version called the Pocket Station, and it was I was like, it only released in Japan, and they couldn't keep up with demand, so they had plans to release in the U.S., but it never made it here because they just couldn't keep up with demand. I'm like, dadgummit, I would have loved to have had something like a Pocket Station because I love the VMU so much with the Dreamcast.
Yeah, the VMU was cool, although I barely used it, though. Like, I used it enough to say, hey, this is a neat idea, but I never...
Right.
It never went past that. Like, what I really wanted was like a tiny Game Boy is what I wanted.
That's the good question. How much, and I haven't researched this yet, but that's a good question. How much did that influence their idea of getting into this? Did they kind of go, okay, maybe we need to look at the PSP? I don't think it had a huge impact, but I think it kind of cued into them. This is their first kind of like getting into like the portable kind of hand market.
Yeah, they were.
I don't know that for a fact. This is what I'm feeling.
Maybe. You know, the VMU from the Dreamcast was, you know, obviously similar, but I don't know. There was a period there where I think they were trying to be creative with memory cards, and they didn't see this coming future, which we're going to get rid of memory cards.
Do you remember how mad we all used to be? Now, I don't think it's as much. Now, Sony... We give Nintendo a lot of crap, right?
Yeah.
You know, for locking in stuff. They're like, we're locking it in. You can only do this and this with our stuff, and this is how we're going to sell it. Sony, for a while, was like, we're going to make all our money off memory cards. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just take over the world with memory cards. And so they really locked you in with compatibility.
Oh, yeah. They loved doing that, dude. I remember not even that when we first got Vitas. Even the Vita was like, yo, use our cards or screw you. Like, that's how it was, right? PSP definitely was that way. PSP had the whatever those are called. And then all of them are proprietary, and none of them were easy to get, and they were super expensive. I think Sony shot themselves in the a-hole multiple times by trying to force that shit down our throats. Bad idea.
We were mad about it, boy. I remember being so mad about it. This is crap.
Yeah, at least Sony, or at least Nintendo's like, SD cards, let's go. You know?
Right.
They had SD cards in the previous gen, and this gen they've got micro SDs. Like, they're not just trying to force some Nintendo thing down our throats. Thank goodness, dude. But then again, Nintendo didn't have to really mess with this era. Well, they did. Okay, I take that back. GameCubes had cards.
Right.
But so prior to that, cartridges were doing all the battery backups.
Right, right. Yeah. And if you don't remember how the chronological order of how this is going, so you had carts, you had cartridges, and you would have saves wouldn't go on the systems because it just didn't make much sense. If you had a whole bunch of cartridges, and if you're saving each one of those games into the system, it's going to take up a lot of resources. So you started putting memory cards in the carts themselves, but of course, batteries would die. But then when we moved into the CD era, you couldn't put a memory chip onto a CD, right?
No. Nope.
So you had to have these little handheld, these little memory cards, these little 1 megabit memory cards.
You know what I think is cool and Sony completely effed up?
What's that?
I don't mean to take us on another tangent.
No, that's fine. That's what we do here.
That's what we do. But the Vita was badass. That was a really cool console, and it still is. But man, have they let that drop like the wet turd they think it is.
Yeah, Vita is still alive in the retro community. It is one of those machines that people recommend because it still has some juice left. It's still got some life.
Yeah, JC Calhoun, by the way, is saying that Nintendo has their own cards. We're not talking about their cartridges. We know that. Mm. Those are proprietary cartridges. I'm talking about the memory sticks. The storage on the device are just SD cards. And they also have a built-in card or built-in storage. It's just not huge. So you go buy 128 gigabyte micro SD and stick it in your Switch. And
right. But I think he's referring to the official licensed SD cards, I think.
Anything. I'm using some total off brand in there. It doesn't care. My Switch does not give a shit.
Not according to Nintendo. I've read it. It's like,
maybe they want me to buy their stuff, but screw them.
You need the little Mario chip.
Uh-huh. See? The Mario chip.
Hello.
Yeah.
Stick me in the device. Wee.
Anyway, the mod scene has been really interesting around that device. The Vita is cool just in general. They shut the store down. It's like they don't care anymore. There's no reason that thing could have carried on longer and been better. And Nintendo quit forcing proprietary formats down our throat. Just make a rad handheld. I think it would have been great. I loved mine.
Well, you know what I'm doing? I am welcoming in the people who are now discovering that if they want to enjoy their Wii store, and is it when which stores are shutting? Nintendo's shutting down two stores.
Wii and 3DS are both going down.
Wii and 3DS. I welcome you to the retro community, the place where we do stuff because we're not allowed to get it anyway.
We're going to listen. So. We're going to preserve it one way or the other. I would love to see some 3DS stuff, although most DS stuff is kind of bad. I mean,
there's a lot of it.
Having a pen and a freaking thing that's required for most games, it's not great.
We're going to talk about it next week, but the screen, the gaming console that both of us got from Ambernick has a touchscreen. That's the reason why I went with that one, because you can do the touchscreen DS stuff. It'll run in Droid. The Droid version. There it is right there.
This is the device. Yeah. This is called the Ambernick. What's the new model?
Ambernick did I can't remember. Anyway,
whatever it is.
You can boot. You can dual boot. You can go into Linux or you can go into Android. And on the Android side, it's TouchMan. That's what the Android does. That's how you navigate. So it's a good, seamless experience.
And it's supposed to be a pretty good touchscreen. Although I've not booted into Android mode yet. I'm only running it in the Linux side and doing, emulation there. But so far, this is a rad little device. I'm very excited. Yeah. Excuse me. Excited, though, about the day I go in here and flash it and put in proper. Like, they're real weird about some of the ROMs they use. And so I want to go do my own thing. But again, SD card, micro SD cards. There's the DS listing and the touchscreen. You know, there's some stuff that works in there just fine. By the way, Tetris for the DS is one of the greatest versions of Tetris ever made. And you don't need anything for that. But, they just list all your games and It's what you're used to from most emulation station type stuff, but and so far,
by the way,
cool.
Nobody sent this to us.
No, this is us.
Me and Scott, I think, got his off Amazon. I bought it directly off the Embernic store just to see how that experience would be. Mm-hmm. It shipped from California, so they do ship from inside the U.S. They warehouse it in the U.S. if it's reordering from. Like, I think they got a warehouse in the U.K. as well as China.
Yeah. They have them here, too, because they had one here in Salt Lake in their distribution here, because that's how I got it. Amazon had it same day when I ordered it.
Excellent. Well, you know, Amazon, they're just a warehouse as well. But you don't always know if that storefront is the official people. And that always kind of worries me a little
bit. Yeah, there's always weird stuff like that. But anyway, so far so good. Well, like Brian's getting his when he does, and we've had our way with it.
Friday.
We
had our way with it.
Oh, that was Thursday. Did they push the day? You got a different day.
It did get pushed one day, but they gave me a date range that it would arrive, and it's not going to arrive on the first day they said it might be. It's going to arrive on the second day as opposed to the third day. Hopefully, it won't be into that third day.
Okay. Bringing things back to Heretic and Hexen for a second.
Yes.
There's this one bit of trivia that pisses me off because I want to see what this was going to look like. There was a third game in what they call the Serpent Riders trilogy. That's what these are all part of. It was originally called Hecatomb. Hecatomb.
You didn't just say it like that. You have to go high up there. Hecatomb.
Hecatomb. Like Mario again.
Hecatomb.
Let's see what I don't have him up anymore. I was going to say, let's see what Ken Griffey says, but I lost that. Which would have featured 9 Dungeons & Dragons inspired character classes. 3 good, 3 neutral, 3 evil. So they were even going to do it on like an alignment system in the game. And a large open world environment as opposed to having linear levels or a hub like Hexen. The game was canceled after Activision acquired Raven Software, leading to most of the original team to leave the company to form Human Head Studios. You've heard of them before. They do stuff. And Romero left id Software. And the games Hexen 2 and Heretic were developed in its place. Only a few elements of Hecatomb survived these games. So
they were literally trying to get to D&D, right? They were trying to get to a first-person shooter D&D, and they were just kept every iteration they were going a little further. And it's too bad we didn't get to see that final story, right? Did we actually get to see? Yeah, we saw the we saw all 3 brothers, right? We saw all 3 of the Serpent Riders from Heretic, Beyond Heretic, and then Heretic
2.
Hexen 2.
Yeah.
Hexen
2. Or Hexen 2, sorry. Yeah, I think that happened. As far as Human Head goes, let's see what they're working on here lately. Okay, interesting. They started with Blair Witch thing, and then they worked all the way up to their latest game was Rune 2.
Yeah, which I loved, and I talked about on our other podcast we had. It was quite unpolished at the time that I got into it, and so it kind of felt floaty, but I loved what was going on in it. And when I went back and looked to see why, I was like, oh, I get it now. I see where these people are coming from.
Yeah.
And so I need to go back and visit it. It was really an uneven experience, but I was having a lot of fun.
Oh, Dungeon Defenders is them. I didn't know.
I haven't seen that. What is Dungeon Defenders? I haven't seen that one.
It's 2015. You must have seen this. It's like action-based tower defense business. It was never my jam, but people liked
it. Gross tower defense.
Kind of gross. Their latest...
I heard Pac-Man's a tower defense. What do you think about that?
F that. That's a terrible idea. So they're... I don't know what they're working on now. Oh, they were... Okay, so they did the 2006 Prey, not to be confused with the other game Prey that came out, and they canceled Prey 2, even though there's another Prey 2, Prey 2 by somebody else.
Well, you got to pray just to make it today, Scott.
Yeah, it's all jacked up. So it looks like Human Head's not really doing much at the moment, but we'll see what they're up to. Now that Microsoft owns them as well, because they were acquired by ZeniMax, and now they own everybody now. They own everyone.
It's so weird that in our lifetimes, we've went from hating Microsoft for buying stuff to kind of appreciating it most of the time. Mm-hmm. They've become good stewards by staying out, just putting money in and kind of staying out of the way with the production.
I have a way.
I'm not saying that's always true. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, in this case, general. I agree. By the way, so this might piss off. I don't know if it will or not. Maybe some Mac haters out there because basically it became Mac OS X and is still what Mac OS is today. But anyway, at least the underpinnings. But Heretic, like Doom, was developed on a Next Step box. That stuff that freaking Steve Jobs was working on when he wasn't there or after he left Apple. And then when he came back, he brought all that over and they built OS or Mac OS out of it. So yeah. It's kind of funny how that works.
Which is good for me because I love the Unix BSD world. And so I was interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I would have totally, if I'd have been programming at that time, I would have totally gotten into that. Yep. That would have been my preferred choice.
Yep, that's true. 97, Hexen was 1997's game that should have stayed on the PC. Commenting that while the N64 version was the best of the console ports up to that point, all three were poor conversions and Hexen was too old by the time they were released. I kind of agree. They really tried to bleed that stuff out as best they could, I guess.
Right.
All right. Let's.
It probably should have. But I was really interested in the N64 version. So you can play multiplayer.
Yeah. Split screen, right?
On the N64 it was split screen.
Yeah.
So you could play it to four. You could play it to four players. And I'm like, okay.
It seems like that'd be fun. We all like four-player shooters on there.
Wait, that might have been. That might have been for Hexen 2. Because I was like, there's only three classes. Let me see if I can read that right.
I thought Hexen had split screen.
Change all the graphics quality. Yeah, it was Hexen. So I guess it was to four. Yeah, four-player split screen.
They added Mario.
I'm curious how that played. I don't have four friends or three friends, so I don't know.
I can tell you it's ugly as hell. I can tell you that. It does not look good.
So it being squished down into a little 4x3 cube, does it make it look better?
No.
No? All right.
I'm going to say no. And also, here's the other thing about all that. The game, well, if I've learned anything over the last couple of, the last month, let's say, of digging so deep into so much retro,
right.
PlayStation 1 and N64 games don't look good at all.
Yeah,
like there's not even like me going, oh, well, it's just later, you know, it's a 3D and some of that's none of it looks good now, unless they were 2D games made for the machine, like Marvel versus Capcom on the PlayStation looks flawless. Amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a big pixel game. Like, it's just a proper platform for it. So it plays better than the arcade even. But anything they were trying to just like go for, it was a growing period. Nobody knew what the frick they were doing. And it looks like shit, okay?
And they didn't have Carmack there to guide them.
No.
I think he always made the right choice to the next step that served the game. And right. I think these other people were there's lots of great talent out there. I'm kind of giving everybody a hard time.
But
just feel like it was definitely a growth moment where anybody had the ability, or at least too many people maybe, had the ability to make games that probably, I don't know. Shouldn't have been given any money. Whatever. I'm just saying.
Hexen on this device,
though. You
shouldn't
give me money to do it. I would suck.
N64. Look how muddy. Look at these textures.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
It looks like mud.
This is not my experience. By the way, when I played this, when my playthrough this week of Hexen Beyond Heretic was done in GZ Doom. I purchased it. Now, you don't have to purchase Hexen because the source code's out there for Beyond. It was released at some point in time. You can get the source code. Can you get the WADs? I don't know. WADs are important.
Source code is 100% available, yes.
Right. So the WADs are there. Is it part of the source code? I don't know if it is or not.
Yeah.
But you get the, you know, you get a lot of your sprites. You get your sprites in the WADs. You get all of the scanning stuff. You get the audio files, all that stuff. You never mess with a WAD file. You need to research it. It's a lot of fun. That's how me and Scott used to do a lot of modding probably back in the day.
Uh-huh. Or at least, yeah. Make all your own WADs. So, if you made a map, it was a WAD, and the WAD included texture information, creature information, spawn points, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I downloaded GZ Doom because I did not like the experience. I purchased it on Steam for $4.99, and then I just grabbed the WAD file out of there because I tried to use the Steam version. The Steam version sucks, by the way.
It's bad.
Because it uses the DOS box, which is fine in itself, but the configuration from launch on Steam, the DOS box they have sucks, and you can get in there and mess with INI files. I didn't want to do that. So I just downloaded GZ Doom, took 5 seconds, threw the WAD in there. Boom. It had the WASD configurations, everything, the mouse look, all that stuff was ready to go out the box.
New,
some upgraded texturing if you wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could, it just looked good. It's smooth, ran so good. How did you play it, Scott?
That's how I played it. Exactly the same way. Exactly
right,
the same way.
That was the way to go.
I mean, back in the day, I played it raw on my, you know, my freaking 486 or whatever the hell it was, but yeah, like in a modern sense, that's probably going to be your fastest way to do it. If you had previously owned the game like I did, I have no problem using an emulator the minute the minute I see it, because I've already got the game, so I know I own it.
Right.
But the, you know, as far as like being able to buy this anywhere outside of that crappy Steam version, pretty hard to do. You can't find it.
It's not available everywhere. This is kind of a forgotten game. So, I mean,
it's forgotten, but it's hugely influential. Like there's so many games that took ideas from it, and there are modern games today that you'll play that you really don't know how much of this Hexen DNA is in there, but it is. And I want you guys to play it if you can find it. And,
but yeah. I don't think I told you, you mentioned who you like the best. I don't think I mentioned what class I like.
Oh, and what do you
I
like gotta there, say, Brian? What do you like?
I gotta say, I like being the fighter, because, I like spiked gauntlets. It's the first level. It's the first thing you have. It's your fist.
Yeah, but melee is problematic, don't you think? These shooter melee systems are never great, especially back then.
It's not bad because it doesn't take long. We didn't even talk about the fact that we use mana here. So use the gauntlets and spike gauntlets. You fight your way through. It's pretty quick. It's very strong hits. If you've never played this before, the first time you do it, I was playing it like a level game. I didn't know anything about the hubs, and I was thinking, I'm going to this point. And I was like, where am I even supposed to go right now? It took me forever to realize I had to bust some glass panes out to progress. And I'm like, okay.
But they don't hold your hand on that stuff at all. You got to figure it all out.
So your first teleport, that's what's fun about this game, by the way, is the figuring out the environmental puzzles. The first teleport you get to, you're already getting the Timmins axe. And the axe is awesome. It uses mana, which strengthens it. But then if you run out of mana, it still works. It still works. Mm-hmm. But then the Hammer of Retribution. I don't know if you've ever played up to the third weapon in this game. As a fighter, you get the Hammer of Retribution. It's kind of Thor style, right?
Yeah.
You get to toss that hammer about with the mana.
Yeah.
And I like it.
I didn't get
far enough to use the Quietus, which I know is the next weapon, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you should look forward to it. It's very cool. There's lots of good weapons in the game. It's very varied, a lot more than Doom is, for example. Which was kind of the point of the time. But there you go. It's our look at Heretic and Hexen 2 and the worlds that enjoyed since.
One more thing. I don't know if you've downloaded the files, but you'll notice near the bottom, I extracted some of the WAD files or extracted some of the audio files from that WAD.
Yeah.
There's a reverse and forward, a couple of files down there.
I'll play them. You want me to play these?
Play it and play the first one that says reverse. Play that and then play it forward. And let's see if we can figure out what the crap this thing is saying.
Oh, good. So sweet. So we got some embedded messages in here. Okay. So here's forward. Or I'm sorry. This is reverse. You want forward or reverse first? What do you want?
I did label it kind of misleading. The reverse is actually what's in the game.
Oh.
The forward is me looping it back to the original recording.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
play the reverse first.
All right. Here's reverse. Hold on. It's not going. Why is... Oh, I'm muted. Sorry. Let me play that again. Let me try it one more time. Oh, sweet, dude. Okay, now here's your fix. Okay. I have no idea. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what that is.
The file is labeled SYAB2D. I think what it says is, so you are back. SYAB. I think that's what it says.
Oh, okay. It could
play one more time. Let's see if you can hear it.
All right. Hold on here. Here's reverse again. Okay. That's definitely not anything English, but this next one might be. So you are back.
So you are back.
No, it says Paul is dead. Paul is dead. Paul is dead.
I ate the walrus.
Satan. Yeah, I ate the walrus. All hail Satan. It's all that stuff. There's back masking back then.
And there's another one too, but you don't have to do that.
No, I'll play this one. Let's see what we got here. Okay. And then this. I don't know.
The echoing really makes it difficult.
Jeff in the chat says, it says, buy Wordle now. That's good. That's it.
They got some echo in there. They also probably slowed down the audio a little bit to make the person's voice deeper. Not really slowed it down, but they really lowered the pitch. Yeah. So this one is STB1D, and I think is serve the bishop. I think that's what he's saying.
Let me play it again. Serve the bishop.
Serve the bishop.
Serve the bishop.
Serve the bishop.
Oh, man. I don't know if that's correct or it's just human pattern recognition or what's going on, but I love it. I freaking love it.
Backwards masking always is always a good time.
Yep. Never fails to be entertaining. Okay. Yes. Well done,
but
everybody.
I mean, it makes sense, serve the bishop, because at the end of Hexen, you realize that this is just all a chess game for the third Serpent Rider brother.
Mm.
And you'll see your class on the chessboard at the end of this game if you complete it.
Oh, so maybe it is serve the bishop.
Serve the bishop.
But serve him what?
Right. Or maybe it's the seven kings. Seven kings, there's a lot of story here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read all the story. There's seven kings that were taken over, easily, confused, and now you're just warriors trying to fight this. There's also Sid elves. How do you say it?
Sid
elves.
I don't remember. I don't remember. Something like that.
City elves.
That's city, right. Elves.
City elves. Not elves that live in the city.
No.
But city elves.
City elves.
I mean, I think that's from the first one, the heretic.
Yeah, and heretic.
I'm not sure if that.
I think. Where's the classes? Yeah, it is, I think, heretic. We don't have it written here, though. All right. Well, on that note, time to guess each other's games.
Destroy it.
Yeah, that's right. We're playing Guess Our Game, and it's a game we picked from an old list of games. Not really a list. It was just, whatever we felt like doing. And
I call my list Google.
Yeah, that's a good one. My list these days have been, what do I feel like capturing and then playing? So that's what I'm doing now. I actually played some of this. I'll talk about that in a second when I tell you what it is, but let's see if Brian can get it. I'll give you the hint. It is 2001.
Oh, 2001.
Yeah. And, that's all I'll say for now. Let's see if you can get anything else out of this. All right. And you know what I will say? It's a Nintendo product there.
It's Nintendo.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Here you go.
Wow. This is 2001.
Yeah. It's got some serious beat going, some serious bass. Just hear somebody back there just slapping that bass, that kind of thing.
Hold on. Yeah, this is like a cart music almost.
Definitely cart music. Well, cartridge music.
Yeah.
Okay, let me try. Okay, this might be more. This might give it away.
Real familiar. Oh shit!
Don't look at the chat.
All right, this is real familiar.
Don't look at the chat. That's all I ask. I mean, this to me is all dead giveaway stuff, but you had to have played a lot of it.
Yeah, at first it felt something like Mario, but now it doesn't sound anything like a cart or a Mario game.
Yeah.
Except he's collecting some coins there, it sounds like.
Well, maybe he is. Maybe he is.
You've been playing a lot of sports games, but I don't hear the sports in it.
It's definitely not sports. Do you give up? Game Boy Advance is the system.
Okay, Game Boy Advance. Okay, now I'm overhead. I'm heading over into Game Boy Advance in my head here.
Yeah, head over there.
The library.
Those little cartridges, they're all laying around.
Yeah. Did this make use of the of blowing on the console?
No,
that
didn't have that. I don't think, did it? Did the Advance have a blowhole? I think that was DS.
Oh. None of them had blowholes. I think it just used the microphone to recognize that you were blowing.
Yeah. But,
right.
But I don't think the Advance had a...
I liked that there was actually a blowhole in it.
I don't
that makes me laugh.
I'm going to show it on screen, and this might help you.
I got it covered up. Can I look at the screen?
If you want. This is your next hint.
Oh, my God. I don't know this game at all.
You don't even know this, do you?
I don't even know this game.
Chat room was correct. The game is... I forgot who said it first, but it's Advance Wars.
Advance Wars. Okay, I do know this.
Turn-based strategy game, one of my favorite games ever made. It revived my interest in turn-based strategy in a way that it's hard for me even to explain how much this game did for that for me. So if you're like a modern-day enjoyer of the newer XCOM games or any of that, like even the XCOM developers have been on record saying, I don't know that we make XCOM 1 and 2 and have the success we had we not all been hooked on Advance Wars and convinced we could make a modern version of this. And I agree with them. I think they make turn-based so much fun.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it's simplified. There's still like a lot you have to be smart and do strategies and all this stuff, but
the art is simplified, but yeah, it looks like some pretty intense strategy. There's the copters, I heard.
Yeah, the copters will take down your plane pretty quick. One note here that is important to note is that this is getting... this and its sequel, Advance Wars 2, are both getting the remaster remake treatment. Last week at the Nintendo Direct, they announced that 1 and 2 are getting something called Reboot Camp. And you should watch the trailer for it. It's a really nice graphical take on this thing. Plus, it has voiceover and some other stuff the original game didn't have. It looks really cool. And I'm a huge fan of this pixel work. It's one of my favorites on the system. But the new thing looks real good.
Wow. It's hard to almost believe this is on the Advance. It looks pretty sweet.
Yeah. It had a map creator. You could make your own maps, share them with your friends. You could play with a link cable. You could do local co-op or local competitive mode. The new game will have online stuff, and it's both games like in that collection.
I like that you had friends, because I get to learn all about the different ways that people could play multiplayer, like link cables and stuff. Yeah, I didn't have any friends. Awesome.
I had a it was both some friends of mine and I have both had Advances. We were in our, like, you know, 20s.
Right.
Whatever it was.
But disposable income.
Yeah. But we also had, I had little tiny kids then, but as they got older, they loved this stuff. So I would play I would play Game Boy Advance link cable games with my daughters all the time. We loved it. It was so much fun. Yeah. It's a great game, dude. And I'm, because I've been so excited about it, I'm actually replaying one on my computer and two on my new Ambernic just to see how it performs there. Yes. So far, so good. It's all good. In the hood. I love this series. Oh, my gosh. I love it so
much. Why is he sweating so much? Why are anime characters always sweat out of that one pore in the side of their head? That must be the largest pore anyone has ever seen.
The story is also capital ridiculous. Like, it's warfare is very not serious in this world. You got troops taking out a whole bunch of troops, and then in the end, the voiceover's like, darn it, you pushed us back again, but I'll get you tomorrow.
Shucks, you pushed us back.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But the game is freaking hard, but fun.
I'm into it.
I love it.
This is another game that you've brought me around to.
It might get its own episode after you've had some time with it, because I think it's a significant title, and I think it should be on the list of, like, whoever does the list of 100 greatest games. I think Advance Wars should be on that list. That's amazing.
Right,
Brian.
I think we should totally do that.
You lose today, but you're also going. So here's your buzzer. Sorry, where'd it go?
This way. So fucking.
I can't find it.
That is the worst buzzer ever. That sounds like what comes out of an anime sweat pour. Gross.
But all right, what's my hint here? What do I need to know?
So the year is 1983 is where the hints will start. This was actually sent in by Kerwin, who occasionally will send me in some Stump Scott on Guess My Game. So 1983.
You even have a sugar daddy on ideas and emails. That's fantastic.
That's right. I don't even write my own show notes. What are you talking about?
I like this. There's nothing wrong with this. Make others do the hard work. All right, here it is. It's Brian's thing, and I'll try to guess it. Ew. It's like a little farts.
I know. When I heard this, it was like perfect.
Yeah, this is kind of perfect. Why do I know this? There's something about this I know.
You could play this. I'm not sure it was on, but the game capture here was from the ZC Spectrum.
Spectrum.
The ZX Spectrum.
Okay. Why do I know this? This is the sound of movement, right? These are footsteps or something.
Sound of movement.
No, I mean, like, the steps. They're step sounds, right? Of some character.
No, these are farts, Scott. I fooled you. I've just all I've done is I farted a lot and I increased the speed and pitch. And what you're doing right now is listening to my farts.
Great. I honestly have no idea, but there's something familiar about this kind of squeaky sound. I don't know what it is.
This is super old school, of course. We're talking about, 1982 or 2003? What was it?
Yeah
83. Like you could find this on the ZX Spectrum. I saw it on the Commodore VIC-20, and it was also on the BBC Micro. So it's a little bit tougher, but this is called Jetpack. J-E-T-P-A-C, Jetpack.
Jetpack game?
Jetpack game, 1983.
All right. Oh, look at that. Sinclair, ZX Spectrum, Jetpack. Was this game good?
Kerwin seemed to like it. But Kerwin really liked the fart sounds when he kills the aliens in stage one. It's great.
That's what that sound is then, I guess.
Yeah, that was really, I know it came to me, but it was intended to make you laugh, get a kick out of the fart sounds.
Do you remember that, that thing Microsoft had there, what was it called? Xbox Arcade. And it was like an actual arcade and your little avatar would run around in there and you'd play old games in there and you had to pay $3
right,
for
right.
What
when it's called arcade?
That?
When it's called Xbox Arcade, I think that's what it's called.
I think that's what it was called. This game was in there.
Was it really?
Yeah, I don't know why or what the deal was. Maybe there was an arcade version of this. So is this the one where he's floating around and?
Yeah, that's
this.
This is
the game.
The one,
oh,
man.
I know why this is familiar. We talked about this when we talked about Joust. This is a Joust-like.
Oh yeah, that's right. We did, didn't we?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's why it's familiar because I was listening to all those back in the thing. Oh, it's got like Defender lasers. That's cool.
Wow, that was all the way back in episode one. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
remember a month and a half ago?
Way back in the day. All right, that's awesome. Well done, dude. What gave you that? That's cool. Now this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Time to do emails. Email is more like it. This is playretro@gmail.com is the email address you need to use. Playretroshow@gmail.com. Playretroshow@gmail.com. This comes from... What am I hearing? Hold on.
I don't know. It's great, though.
Do you hear that?
Oh, I do hear it.
Playing back here. Hold on. Wait. That game had crap sound.
It was horrible. Well, you know, it was the VIC-20 and the Spectrum. So, I mean,
they should have
did what it could.
Yeah, I guess so. Sinclair. So dumb. Whatever. So many people trying for the Game Throne back then, and so many failed. It's just a weird time. Odd time. All right. Here's the email. This is from Tom Norris, who wrote in and says, "Hey, Scott and Brian, I love the new show. I do have a nit to pick, however, about episode 2 and Phantasy Star 4. Early in the episode, Scott mentions that Phantasy Stars 1, 2, and 3 didn't appear here on the Genesis, but I distinctly remember in 1991 trading in my NES and a bunch of games and using the credit to get a brand new Sega Genesis and a copy of Phantasy Star 2. It looked much cooler than the other RPGs I'd seen on the NES. I loved that game. It was the only one of the series I ever played because not too much later I traded the Genesis in for my new SNES. All this trading took place at my local electronics boutique. Thanks to Scott for messing up and drawing out some great memories. Keep up the good work, Tom." Did we confirm this, though? Hold on.
Did we confirm that it was there? I'm inclined to believe what Tom has to say. I'm not 100% sure, but it seemed like I did play it.
No, he's right. He's right.
Yeah, went through all of them for the Genesis, but I didn't. The thing is, I went through all of them and I didn't call you out. So that's really on me, Tom.
Yeah, no, he's right, though.
I should have. I had the information. I just didn't feel like correcting Scott. I don't know why I didn't do it.
Yeah, why didn't you do it? I'm looking right here on eBay. Somebody's selling it for $40 on eBay. 1990 it came out. You're 100% right. Phantasy Star 2. Early Genesis title.
Right.
Very early. I didn't realize they did that. I knew, I thought 3 for sure was. Was 3 not here in the States? Well, now I have to know.
I thought it was.
Hold on, I'm looking. Here we go. Phantasy Star 3 Genesis. Yeah, that was here too. So I guess 2, 3, and 4 are all here. What do I know? What do I know? I know nothing. I know nothing. Do I know anything?
You know.
No. The answer is no, I don't. By the way, same year. So 2 and 3 came out the same year.
Yeah.
Weird. Phantasy Star 4 came out. I don't have that in front of me. We already talked about it, but anyway.
And I'm glad we did Phantasy Star 2 as well because, I didn't know much about it before I started playing it on my Genesis Mini that I had.
The game's great. Awesome game.
That's been an awakening for me too. Like I said, there was a time in my life where I was obsessed with very specific games and I would only play those games and nothing else would come between me and my game of choice at the time. So I'm getting to go back. It's been fantastic getting to go back and learn all these games.
It's my favorite part.
Passions for it.
I love this show for that reason. I was talking to Brian earlier about a game called, it was on the Genesis as well. It was called Shakan. And he looks like Eddie the Beast from like all those Iron Maiden posters.
That's where I was. I knew I couldn't place it. You're right.
It totally does. It's an early Genesis title that uses that old box art with a stupid grid and everything. Anyway, it's, I haven't seen this cartridge since I owned it forever ages ago. Played a little bit today. The memory flood was painful almost. It was insane. And that game is hard as shit. Really hard. Nice. Anyway, we keep digging up fun stuff and we keep sharing it with you right here.
And you keep sharing it with us when you send it to our email.
Yeah, or to Brian's address.
Welcome.
Whoops, where he gets where he gets all kinds of cool stuff from people, and that's awesome. Don't stop for me, okay? Keep it coming. Hey, we never decided on what our next thing was going to be before the show. Usually we do.
Yeah.
What do you think?
A good question.
Where are you feeling here? Because I really like the idea of a Metroid retrospective, but I also like the idea of Pac-Man. I like the idea of this GoldenEye thing. I'm super into NHL 94 and sports games. I mean, whatever. What do you think? Where do you want to go?
We got a really short week. I think we ought to tackle something that's not going to be as a deep dive like Metroid. Oh, my God. That is going to be
huge.
If we go with the series, that's going to be a huge freaking dive.
I agree.
NHL 94 and the NHL series, I think, might be the way to go.
You know what?
Got a short week.
We could do that. And I know some people are like, what? Really? A sports game? I'm telling you, it is the greatest sports title.
Let us convince you.
Ever. All right?
Ever.
Ever. And I don't know what was going on in 94. Hell of a year for sports games. Real good.
Right.
Just some good golf stuff, some baseball stuff, football. All of it had a great year in 94, which we'll pick that apart, too, and see what's going on there. Actually, 94 was a good year for games in general and also for movies. And 84 was also a great year for games and movies. 98 was an excellent year for video games.
Right.
I'm trying to see patterns, but it gets all broken up. So who knows?
It does. But don't worry, it won't just be all sports talk. This is the Play Retro show. We'll be talking about the people behind the scenes, the stories, how it got made, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. So stick around. Come back next week and listen to more of this insane thing that we're talking about. In the meantime, if you like what we do here, we would love it if you came and threw a buck our way. That's all it takes is to get into the ground floor. You can pay more if you want, but... And there's lots of reasons why you may want to do more, but patreon.com/playretro is the place to do it. I want to thank everybody who heads over there and does that, because that makes life so much better for us. It makes it possible for us to make this show, and it keeps Brian's pimp happy. Just kidding. I shouldn't say that. What does that even mean?
My pimp, Scott.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. But anyway, that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you all for listening, for watching. playretroshow@gmail.com, playretroshow on Twitter. And the website where everything, like I just mentioned, can be found is over at frogpants.com/playretro. That'll do it for us. Until next time, go play an old game.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.